Welcome to our latest episode of the All Clear to Travel podcast. I'm Gary Nelson, Head of Corporate Affairs at All Clear. In this series of podcasts, we'll be talking to industry experts and people involved in travel to get their perspectives on some of the major issues shaping the travel insurance industry today. I'm very pleased to be joined by Sarah Taylor, Director, Consular and Crisis at the Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office today. Sarah and her team play a vital role in helping British nationals overseas when things sadly go wrong. And today we'll get her perspective on why planning properly before travelling, understanding what your insurance covers, and the very urgent need of disclosing full medical conditions and why this can make all the difference in a crisis abroad. So first and foremost, a warm welcome, Sarah. It's great to have you here. Let's start with a little look at your career and how you found yourself at the FCDO. It sounds on the face of it a fascinating job, but I'm sure it's never the same day, almost day by day.
That's right. Thank you, Gary. It's lovely to be here and nice to see you again. I joined the FCDO about 8 years ago, but had spent most of my career working in public service, either in different government departments, working internationally at the United Nations, and I've also worked for local government in the London Borough of Hackney, where I live. So I like to say that I've worked at every level of government, at a local, national and international. But the FCDO is absolutely some of the most fascinating work that I have ever done. And the current job that I have, as you mentioned, as Director and Consular in Crisis, is continually rewarding, extraordinary, and a great place to learn, and a really fantastic opportunity to serve the public. It's the FCDO's only public-facing service, our Consular and Crisis Services, and presents the FCDO with some of its most challenging diplomatic and personal challenges, but is absolutely endlessly fascinating and rewarding.
Yeah, it does sound a hugely rewarding and interesting job. And of course, the downside of certainly some of our involvements with the FCDO is that usually people are having problems. And we've seen a growing trend towards people coming unstuck and, I guess, you know, reverting to things like GoFundMe when they realise they do have a problem. So from your own perspective and given what you see and the frequency of cases that you might see, how important do you see it that people are properly insured before they travel?
It's absolutely vital, Gary. The two pieces of advice that we consistently and most importantly emphasise, I tell all of my friends every time I meet them, but we also try to publicise through our campaigns, is one, check the government's travel advice on gov.uk. It's really easy to search for it, and you can enter the name of the country that you want to travel to. We have an AI tool on there which allows you to get tailored advice for the specific travel plans that you have. And then second, most importantly, take out travel insurance and make sure that travel insurance is tailored to you for the duration of your stay, for the activities that you want to get involved in, and for any medical conditions that you have. Perhaps it's worth me just saying a little bit about the scale of the work that we provide.
I think so.
FCDO. So on the Consular and Crisis side, we have a public-facing call centre. We take up to 1,000 calls a day from British nationals seeking advice from the government on their travel. We have an emergency travel document centre. So when people lose their passports, for example, they're able to get an emergency travel document which will allow them to travel home. We issue 25,000 emergency travel documents a year. And then our assistance caseworkers, who provide tailored bespoke support to people who have got into difficulty and need longer term support, we manage up to 28,000 cases a year. So it gives you a sense of the scale of the number of British nationals who need our assistance overseas and how we're able to respond to them around the world. I have a staff of around 1,000 based in both in London, in Scotland, and in our embassies around the world, dedicated to supporting British nationals who unfortunately find themselves in difficulty overseas.
And given that scale, which is impressive in terms of its operation, obviously not a level of cases that we'd love to see. None of us want to see that people have problems when they do go overseas. Are there any tips that you specifically feel that you would like to pass on to people in terms of pre-planning before they go away, particularly to sort of some more of the far-flung destinations? One of the trends we're seeing is that people want more of an experience when they travel away. They actually want to entrench themselves into the local culture or see things that are off the beaten track. But quite clearly, that can lead to issues if you do have a medical issue when you're a long way from nearest help. So I just wonder whether there are any kind of practical tips that, from your experience, that would generally help people.
So I would love to see, we all pat down our pockets, don't we, when we're just leaving the house to go on a trip to check we've got our passport. I would love to see people doing that mental check at the same time to make sure they've got travel insurance and to make sure that travel insurance, as I said, fits the trips that they're planning. For example, I have an annual travel insurance package. That might not necessarily cover trips to certain destinations. It might not cover certain activities that I might want to do. And something may have happened in the year, which means I've developed a medical condition that I need to make sure that that insurance policy is updated. So just doing that mental check before you set out on a trip is an absolutely essential part of any preparation. And yes, insurance does add an extra bit of cost to your money, but it is fundamentally part of your preparation for holiday. And that small investment at the start of your holiday could save you tens of thousands of pounds if something goes wrong.
I don't really feel that too many people have got a handle on, having been used to the NHS, the wonderful NHS that we have, and everything pretty much being covered in this country. I don't know that people necessarily have got a good handle on medical costs when they travel to somebody's far-flung. They probably won't even know whether it's private-only facilities or, what the standard of the standard of the hospital is going to be like, should they have to incur that.
We're absolutely seeing people, very understandably, as new markets open up, want to explore new places in the world, to have more adventurous holidays, to step away from some of those countries that are perhaps really built up and supported for the tourist industry. But that does come with additional risks, and it's important that all travellers prepare properly for those risks. People might think that if they've got a global health insurance card or a European health insurance card, a GHIC or an EHIC as they're known, that covers them. But actually that really only covers you for certain types of state medical care. And if unfortunately you are in an accident or you do have a serious medical incident while you're abroad, then the basic state care may not be appropriate for you. And that insurance card also doesn't cover things like repatriation back to the UK if you need to come back to the UK for further medical treatment and you're not able to fly commercially, or if you need additional services, like if you're skiing and you need to use the mountain rescue team to get you down from a mountain, for example. Those are all additional costs that the right kind of insurance can cover for you.
One of the good things that I think the FCDO have been doing is really taking the initiative in terms of their Travel Aware campaign. Clearly, media has expanded in so many different ways and different channels. So I'm intrigued to understand kind of your objectives for your Travel Aware campaigns, particularly as you go through each year when there's different events going on around the world. World Cups go on to rugby, football. So there's quite a big task there to make sure you get your messaging across. But I think you're doing a particularly good job in that area, working closely with industry, of course. So do you want to just give us a little bit more insight of kind of what you're aiming to achieve with Travel Aware?
Yeah, thanks, Gary. So our Travel Aware campaign is a sort of always on campaign that we try to pump out through, you mentioned our industry partners, absolutely vital to getting those messages out. We work with airlines, with cruise companies, with insurance companies. We work with airports and ports, anywhere where people sort of interact when they're thinking and planning about their travel. And we run continuous campaigns throughout the year to try to encourage people, to check their travel advice on gov.uk, to get the right kind of travel insurance that covers all of the eventualities for their trip. And we run campaigns specifically, as you mentioned, around events. So during the summer, we run a Stick With Your Mates campaign for young people perhaps going on holiday without their parents for the first time, encouraging them how they can be safe when they're doing that. But also around particular sporting events, so whether that's the Euros or the World Cup, making sure that people understand the particular legal frameworks of the country that they're going to, that they understand how to be safe in crowds, that they're using alcohol appropriately, that they're being respectful of the culture that they're travelling to. And really focused on making sure that people have the most enjoyable time. We want people to travel. We want people to get out there and have these incredible experiences and bring that experience and enrich back into the UK. But being able to do that safely and enjoyably is the most important thing.
Events, as they have been around the world, changing so quickly. So that task of keeping that information updated as currently as you can is must be a huge task. So there must be quite a team sitting there inputting information into that.
Absolutely. So we have, we have a team in London who are responsible for making sure that the travel advice that we put on gov.uk is continually updated. But that information is sourced directly from our embassies and our missions around the world, the people who are best placed to know what's happening in that country. And we make sure that that is continually updated. Not only do we use a colour coding system, as you mentioned, of red, amber, green, but we also have lots of detail on those pages in a very readable way that helps direct people to understanding local customs, to thinking about what kind of activities that they might want to undertake, potential risks relating to crime or terrorism that might be relevant to particular areas within a country, not the whole country, but understanding the geography of that country and the different political situation, and as well as the potential risk of natural disaster, including, for example, climate change, which we're seeing is making a substantial difference to how people want to travel and the kind of things that they want to do. So that travel advice is absolutely vital. It's also a really popular public service. We get 28 million hits a year on our travel advice. So people really are using it.
Yeah.
And we're continually trying to think of how to make it more user-friendly and more tailored to people when they travel.
Well, the more engagement people have with it, the more you can learn from the interactions that people are having. So, I guess that comes back to industry as well, because I know for a fact that we have links on our own website to and get the messaging out there regularly to make sure that they're up to date with the latest FCDEO advice. And likewise, your materials that you produce that I know we share with our database via emails, etc. So I think it's a responsibility of obviously government, and it's a responsibility certainly of those involved in travel that we support these initiatives, get that information out there to people, because I think it ultimately what we're all trying to achieve is that people do travel with the right cover, but should they have a problem, that cover actually covers them for their needs, as opposed to sadly what you see a lot of, which is the downside of it, is where people don't have that cover and then they come to you in a pretty desperate situation. So I guess from what I'm alluding to there really is your ideal is to see less of these cases.
Absolutely. We would love people not to need our support. And there's a misconception, I think, that if people do get into trouble and they don't have travel insurance or they don't have the right kind of travel insurance, that the government will pick up the bill. Unfortunately, we're not able to do that. The best that we can do is direct and support people to identifying other sources of money, which very often is their friends and family, and we can help them ask for that additional support. But there isn't a state system that will step in when the insurance isn't going to cover what's happened to somebody. And so really making sure that you understand what the potential risks are, give yourself that reassurance that you can relax, that you can enjoy your holiday, that you can do all of the adventurous things that you want to do, but just making sure that you've got that reassurance behind you that if something does go wrong or you need a bit of extra help, the insurance company is there and is going to support you.
Yeah, I know one of the sort of more recent topics that we've been discussing, that you've been discussing, certainly with the travel insurance industry, is this growing trend for people travelling overseas for cosmetic procedures. And we've had some interesting discussions around that. And I know that you've seen an increase in cases of people travelling overseas and then having problems.
Absolutely. And it is something that people really need to think seriously about before they go overseas to have a medical procedure. There have been a lot of news stories in the press about people coming back with complications from the surgeries that they might have had. And if people need additional medical treatment while they're in the country that they've travelled to for that surgery, if they, in the worst case scenarios, need to be repatriated back to the UK for ongoing medical treatment, that's not going to be covered by most travel insurance policies. And those costs, again, can go up to the tens of thousands of pounds and sometimes even more than that. And so it's really important that people are having a proper detailed conversation with their travel insurance company about what's covered and what's not. There is, I know, through Biba, the British Insurance Brokers Association a list of specialist travel insurance companies you can find on their website. So if you are going to go and do something that's perhaps a little bit more unusual, perhaps there's sort of there isn't a commercial market necessarily widely available, you can go onto that website. You can check to find specialist suppliers. That will be a bit more expensive, unfortunately, but going abroad for surgery is not a low risk activity, and it is something that you need to think carefully and prepare for.
Yeah, it is a growing trend, and we're seeing more people contacting us to find out whether we do or don't. At the moment, we don't offer cover. I think that, as you've said already, that the vast majority of insurers don't. I know there's one or two specialists that have just started to get into that marketplace, and it'd be interesting to see how it goes, because obviously the more pressures there are on the NHS, the longer the waiting lists become, the more people might look at that as an alternative option. But people should be aware, as you've highlighted, that getting cover is very, very difficult. So they have to think very, very long and hard about the decision that they want to make before they go there without travel insurance. Or if they think they've got travel insurance, make sure they know whether it is or isn't covered. But you know, from my research, it tells me that the vast majority of insurers won't cover that particular risk at the moment. So also, one of the other things that's slightly concerning us from recent research mm-hmm. that we've done has been a growing trend of people under-declaring their medical conditions. So in many ways, it may be unintentional that they're doing that, but also we're seeing it during the crisis, the cost of living crisis, that perhaps people are looking at it as a shortcut. Are you seeing instances where people just don't have any cover whatsoever, or that unfortunately when they look into their travel insurance overseas, it's not doing the job that they needed to do because there's shortfalls in it?
So we see both right. Very frequently. I think about 25% of the cases that we're supporting through our consular assistance will be cases with people who don't have insurance or don't have adequate insurance. I'd be really interested in the research, but a couple of factors that may have contributed to that sort of not fully declaring or that sort of lack of full cover might be an increase in people purchasing insurance online, for example. Yep. It can be quite easy to click through, get a package, think you're covered, but because you're just buying it quickly through an app, you haven't properly sort of examined the policy and read all the terms and conditions necessarily. It might be because I know companies, my bank certainly does, when I open a bank account, they give me free travel insurance and I think, oh, well, great, I'm covered for my travel insurance. But of course, that's not a tailored package. It's not personal to me in my yep. circumstances or particular trips or activities that I might want to go on. And so I think there's things that we as individuals need to do and take responsibility for, and there's things that the industry can do to support and help make sure people have the right kind of cover. Making sure that there is an option for somebody to talk to a human being and talk through some of their medical condition, just ask questions about what they might want to cover. I think encouraging, whether that's through using AI tools online or through talking to somebody in the insurance company, asking inquisitive questions, just checking, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Is there anything else that you think you might be planning on doing while you trip? Is your trip going to be for 5 days or 7 days? Have you made a decision? Have you got insurance that's going to last long yeah. enough over the course of your trip? Those kinds of things, I think, are really important. And then, of course, you know, we want people to trust the travel industry, the travel insurance industry. And so, you know, the more that the insurance can do for building a reputation for good customer care, for paying out when that's the right thing to do, for paying out quickly and not putting barriers in the place that sort of puts people off making claims. Again, we want that to be a trusting relationship so that as customers, they feel they can declare and be honest about everything they might be planning to do or what their medical circumstances are. And in turn, that the insurance company is trusted and people will pay out when they have done those things yeah, appropriately.
Yeah, and I concur completely with all of that. The more people genuinely trust that the policy they've got is a quality policy and will pay out. Again, we see maybe more so by the online mechanism that you know, people think that there's kind of been a growing trend to sort of try and buy as cheaply as you can. But as we all know, if you're going to a faraway country on a cheap policy, you know, are you really going to get what you think you're going to get when it comes down to the cost? So another big area of our research shows that people for destinations such as Mexico, Thailand, Canada, Caribbean have got no perception whatsoever in terms of kind of what medical costs might be if they were to go there. I think everyone kind of knows that America's going to be hugely expensive. But some of these other places now, Mexico might surprise a few people, but obviously they're quite close to America and can see what their model's done. So do you have hotspots? I mean, they probably tie in, I guess, with the pure volume of people that go there. So the more people that travel, the higher the number of people that you're going to have incidence-wise. But are there particular hotspots or growing hotspots that you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on, Gary, that our hotspots do tend to sort of coincide with where most Brits travel. And that can be a risk for people because they assume they're very familiar with those places. They're very geared up towards British tourists. So they assume it's safe. Perhaps they don't feel as much need to take out travel insurance as they might do if they were going to further flung more exotic locations. I mean, sadly, for all of our, I mentioned we have around 28,000 cases a year that we're providing long-term assistance for. Of those, hospitalizations and deaths sadly account for about 20% of all of those. So serious incidents that people need our assistance for. Of those hospitalizations, 42% occur in Southern Europe. People might think that's, they're off to France, they're off to Spain. They don't need to worry too much. But actually, because of that's where most people travel, Spain and Greece account for sort of 19% and 11% respectively of all the hospitalizations that we manage. If you don't have appropriate insurance for those places, even with a European health insurance card, as we mentioned, that private additional private care, repatriation back to the UK, if that's what you need, you might need legal support because you've been subject to a crime associated with that hospitalisation. All of those things are additional costs that your insurance can cover if you've got the right policy, that your standard issued with your bank account insurance might not necessarily cover in your EHIC, unfortunately, wouldn't.
Yeah, we are seeing, again, through our research, we have seen a significant growth from people deciding not to opt to take travel insurance out when they're going to what they consider to be nearby destinations. France comes into that. But Spain's an interesting one because clearly that's the most popular destination for Brits. But we see average claims in Spain being twice that they are in Portugal, which is right next door. And you think geographically there's no reason. If you need to get back from Spain or Portugal, it's a similar sort of distance in terms of repatriation, as you say. So the cost should be similar. But I think there's more of a tendency, particularly if you're staying in a hotel, that if you have a problem in the hotel, that you're going to end up in a private facility. And therefore, I think that's why we're seeing higher costs. But that's just an interesting fact. And as we all know, Spain is the most popular destination. So I'm not surprised it figures very highly. But again, Greece is a 4-hour flight away, or 3.5-hour, 4-hour flight away. And subject to very, very hot conditions, which can play havoc with people's health as well. So,
And I think also, it's really important, and I'm sure insurance companies do, to think about targeting first-time travellers, targeting young people, the importance of making sure that those people whose parents might have bought the travel insurance before and they're travelling for the first time, they need to think about that as something that they need to do. And also because young people might get involved in slightly riskier activities. They might drink a little bit too much. Mm. They might want to try that paragliding that's being advertised on the resort. Those things can be absolutely fine. But again, just think about what support you might need if something does go wrong.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because we see a lot of, sadly, we see a lot of motor scooter accidents, particularly in Far East. And, the cover element of that is around, were you wearing a helmet? I think you mentioned earlier that obviously that they find out that the claim is declined by an insurance company. What kind of care packages thereafter you find that you can't really help that person in terms of the financial side of it?
That's right. So unfortunately, we can't support people financially in that situation if they haven't got the right kind of insurance. We do work very closely with people who do find themselves hospitalised or with the families of people who've been involved in an accident or who've fallen ill, to try to help them identify sources of funding. Sometimes that's through charities based in those countries. Sometimes that's through family and friends and raising money themselves. But that's obviously an incredibly difficult thing for a family to do in an already very distressing situation if somebody is ill or in hospital. And you mentioned at the beginning, Gary, the sort of rise in GoFundMe and people using that as a means to raise money. But we see quite a lot of times people reaching to GoFundMe as an, when they haven't got insurance to support medical treatment or repatriations, for example, and it really coming very well short of what people actually need to do, in what they need to pay in order to get home or get the treatment they need. We've seen cases not so long ago of a 15-year-old girl who was travelling with her family, very sadly, involved in an accident, which was absolutely not her fault, but didn't have travel insurance. The cost of the repatriation for her to come back to the UK and medical treatment was £45,000. They weren't able to raise anything like that through GoFundMe and were still left with tens of thousands of pounds worth of bills.
Wow.
Likewise, cases, an elderly lady in her 70s had a stroke, hadn't declared that as a medical condition. So in the insurance declined to pay out because she hadn't declared that pre-existing condition. She'd had a stroke previously. And she was stuck with medical bills of £75,000, which the family ultimately had to raise in order to support her and to bring her home. And we see those kind of things all the time. So for us, as I say, sort of making sure that travel insurance is just part of your standard planning and making sure that insurance is tailored for you personally is absolutely essential.
Yeah, I think very happily, given the numbers of overseas travellers that go from the UK, thankfully, the percentage is relatively small in the overall total. So on a happier note, we all love to travel. We all enjoy our travel. And I'm sure in your particular role and knowing the places around the world that people are increasingly wanting to go to, where's a favourite destination for Sarah to head off to?
Yeah, you're absolutely right to sort of, I mean, as I said, we really want people to travel and enjoy travelling. I love travelling and I'm lucky enough through my work with the FCDO to be able to travel quite a lot. I've been to Japan a couple of times with work and have always found it just a fascinating and beautiful country. And so this year is my 20th wedding anniversary. So my husband and I have decided we're going to take the kids. We're going to do a big tour of Japan together to treat ourselves. And I'm really delighted to sort of go back there to explore it properly and to introduce what I think is an extraordinary country to my children. And of course, I'll be taking out travel insurance. My husband has a pre-existing condition, so we will be declaring it. And we're going to have a brilliant time.
Well, I really hope you will. It seems to be a growing destination for people. I don't know whether that's Race the World has done that for it, but it looked amazing. It looked a bit scary, actually, Tokyo at 32 million, I think, what it was. But I wish you a fantastic trip, a trouble-free trip. But, you know, in the instances where people do get into trouble, it's reassuring to know at least there's a fantastic support network there from the FCDO. It's up to us in the industry to highlight that, to keep highlighting it and to keep working with you. But we really appreciate your time coming in to speak with us today. It's been a fascinating discussion. I've learned an awful lot more about the FCDO as well, which is great. So thank you.
Thank you, Gary. It's been great to chat.